towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Take these sacred sounds from the mandala of the mouth, blow them into the palms of your hands, and offer that as a blessing over your being. So today we're going to continue with the theme of clearing the dust, polishing the lamp, part two. And it's such a deep and beautiful teaching, and I think it calls upon us to be very clear about the terms that Hazrat Inayat Khan, who's the teacher that we're following, his philosophy, his school of Sufism. We also call him Murshid. Annette, you'll know when I say Murshid, I mean Inayat Khan. But this idea, this subject of the soul, as I mentioned last class, it's a subject that I myself, in my many years of training and all the beautiful teachers that I've encountered, hasn't really been emphasized a lot, at least for me. And so I want to focus again on it. It's ever so important, I think, now. I mean, when we look at the group online with us, we're all of a certain age. There's maybe more life behind us than ahead. So it's important also in the environment of COVID, that we tune to our soul. Where's the soul? What is the soul? And how do we highlight, illuminate the soul? It's a worthy endeavor. I was talking to Joe just about something that's going on in our environment. There's a project proposed for just south of our building. I'm feeling compelled to be involved in some peaceful resistance, let's say. So, I told him I'm going to get through these two meetings because I want the concerns to be voiced to the city and the builders. And then after that, I said, this part of my life I feel is really dedicated to, the inner life and developing, that deep connection with what lies beyond. So not that I don't fully enjoy life and I won't fully, but sometimes we have to let things go and tune into what's really important. And each of us have to decide that for ourselves, but I hope that these teachings will be illuminating and give you some food for thought. And so here we go. I'm going to review a couple of points from last month's class, because I think that it's good to give that context for as we move on. So Murshid says to us, the heart of a person is like a globe over the light of the soul. The heart of the person is like a globe over the light of the soul. When the globe is dusty, naturally the light is dim. And when it's clean, the light increases. So we're always talking about polishing the heart in Sufism through our prayers, through our breath, through zikr, the practice of zikr. This is why it's so important to do these practices, because we're cleaning that globe, the dust from the heart, the dust from the globe, so that the light of the soul can come through, that we can experience it, and not only experience it for ourselves, but share it, uplift, and help to illuminate others and our world. Murshid also says, while experiencing life through the heart, the soul at a moment thinks, oh, I'm sad, or glad, or afraid, or humorous. In fact, it's a momentary experience. In another part of this teaching, he talks about the shade, the globe can be different colors. And if the soul isn't very clear, it starts to think of itself as these colors or as the ornament of the globe, the glass. Well, we don't want to do that. That might be fascinating, but what's beyond that? When I used to have what one might call mystical experiences, and I'd share them with Murshid Avira, she'd say, so what? What does it mean? what's your insight around it? So that's what we're going for, into insight, deep insight, understanding, awareness. Another point that Murshid made is, as every light needs fuel, electricity, kerosene, whatever it is, a match to get it going and kindling, so does the light, and here it's capital L, which is ours, which is ourself. This also needs fuel. And then he goes on to say, we learn in Sufism that mysticism, which teaches us how to collect the fuel, which is necessary not only for the body, so food for the body, but also for our mind and our soul. Someone's not muted. Can I ask you to mute? Thank you so much. So we need to collect this fuel, and as much as the body needs it, so does this inner part of our being. And how do we nurture that? And then Murshid answers that question, and he says, by concentration, by meditation, and other ways of contemplative practices. The purpose is accomplished by the Sufi. That is purposed. It is the longing of every soul, and we can accomplish that through our practices to get closer and closer to that realization. Now, I've had people ask me questions about, they'll say, the soul's supposed to be absolutely pure. How can it be confused? Well, and the heart, how's the heart different than the soul? And where's the body and the heart? How are they connected? So these are questions that maybe roll around in our minds as we listen to these teachings. So for a moment, I'm going to step out of the teaching that I'm giving now and clarify this with Murshid's own words. Because in the Gathas, there's this whole section that talks about it. And most of you have probably studied the Gathas. We've studied them together. But let me talk about this, and I want to share this teaching with you. The relationship of heart and soul and mind, because those words are, well, you know, they're very fluid. We could make up all kinds of ideas about what Murshid means, but I wanted to turn to his words about this. So he says, the heart is the principal center, the heart. And we know that when Murshid talks about the heart, he's talking about this area that's really the deep heart, which might be just slightly above the navel area. It's where we have our feelings. You know, we feel it in our gut. That's the deep heart. Then he talks about, it's almost like there's a reflector there that sends that message up to our heart, that center. So he says, the heart is the principal center, not the heart in the body, but the heart in the depth of the mind. For the mind is the surface of the heart. The mind is the surface of the heart. The heart and mind are as one tree. The roots of the heart and the branches and the flowers and the leaves represent the mind. So the root is the heart, and the things that emerge out of that are aspects of mind. Is that clear to everyone? I see a few of you on screen. If so, please nod your head yes to affirm. Okay. So the heart and the mind are as one tree. The root is the heart, and the branches and the fruits and the flowers and the leaves represent the mind. The heart is at the bottom of thought and imagination and all. Feelings belong to the heart, thought to the mind. So what belongs to the mind can be expressed in words. What belongs to the heart cannot. So now you're starting to see the feelings become expressed through the mind. So just like the roots of a plant expresses itself through the trees, the branches, the flowers, and the fruits. You see the connection. Everything in the mind is intelligible. But what is intelligible is not expressible, right? How many of you, I know many of you have said it to me. I've had this experience, but I don't know quite how to put it in words. Isn't that correct? Isn't that how it is? So we can have this deep realization or experience, but we can't really articulate it. Now Murshid's drawing this connection between the two. Everything in the mind is intelligible, but what is intelligible is inexpressible. Or beyond what is intelligible, that is the heart. Okay. Deeper feelings, kindness, sympathy, love, all fine feelings which cannot be expressed in words are activities of the heart. The heart is like a sea. I'm looking out now here at RC. The brain is that susceptibility which is sensitive. No, excuse me. The heart is like the sea. The waves are its emotions. And we've seen that metaphor many times in Murshid's teachings, that that we want to go to the depths. Sometimes he says we want to go to the depths where there's silence in the sea. At other times he says we want to become light and we want to float on the sea, not to be overcome with emotions. So heart is like the sea and the waves are its emotions. The brain is all over the body. In fact, this is now being found in his times, he said, by modern science. How much more we know that now, science has taught us. The brain is all over the body. I mean, there's an organ of the brain here, but it's really getting information and experiencing from all over the body. And the brain is that susceptibility which is sensitive, such as nerves, which have the sensitive feelers in the brain. So there's kind of a scientific connection to body and mind. He goes on further in another teaching in the Gathas, and he says, plainly speaking, the depth of the mind is the heart. And that's clear, that encapsulates the whole previous statement. The depth of the mind is the heart. The surface of the heart is the mind. You see those two things? So when you think of heart and mind, you can understand what Murshid is teaching us. Mind is a receptacle. Please listen. This is very important. It's leading to our first practice. Mind is a receptacle of all to which it is exposed. The mind is a receptacle to all which it is exposed. It's like a photographic plate, or maybe now we say our iPhone's taking a picture, or our disk drive saving information. So it's like a photographic plate, and therefore all conditions, happy or unhappy, all actions, good or bad, all that is beautiful or void of beauty, become impressed upon the mind. Think of that, that we carry that in us, in our mind. Its first impression is on the surface, and as the impression is retained in the mind, so it reaches the depth of the heart. And one could say then, from that first teaching, Murshid's talking about the heart encapsulating the soul, it can also make an impression on our soul, or the soul gets confused with the impression, we could also say. But the photographic plate is not creative, and the heart is creative. Therefore, every impression which once reaches the heart becomes a seed in a fertile ground. The heart produces all it has received. So then you think back to that metaphor. The heart is the root and the mind are the branches and the seeds. So we have to let ourselves ask this question. What are we nurturing, allowing to go in, keeping hold of, that then influences what is flowering from our being? And here, those of you that have studied, and we have it online, Murshid Hidayat, the son of Inayat Khan, was very clear. This is the purpose of the, my little light went out here. Let's see if we can get it back on. If not, there we go. That this is the real reason why we want to do those purification breaths every single day. It's like wiping the dust. It's happening here. That's okay. We'll manage without it if it doesn't work. A few more sentences from this teaching from the Gothas. Therefore, it is to the great disadvantage of the fault-finding man or woman that wishes to find fault with all that one sees. So we look at our critical mind. Do we see something? What in ourselves brings information to something that then finds this fault? I mean, it's ultimately within ourselves that we're because of our mind. I mean, we interpret things this way. And then he says, if one is not able to throw away immediately the undesired impression, which is not easy, he says that, which is not so easy, one begins in time to produce what one has received. So this is a little bit like what we sow, we reap. You know, what we're planting. Let me get another try on this thing. I'm sorry, excuse me for interrupting the view, but trying to get this more balanced in the light. Thank you. So we really wanna, you know, we wanna look at that, you know, look at the things that agitate us through the day. Look at the way we criticize others. Look at the way we judge others. I mean, we may not even know them. We could just look at someone in a grocery store line and decide we don't like them. Why? It's because of these impressions and the lack of clarity. So, you know, we want to be able to be clear, to come to our world clear, to offer clarity and light and love instead of this gauze of impressions. Okay. So then he says, human nature is such that all the bad things we see in another person, these are actually things that we may have within ourselves, and we have to look at it that way. So when we have these experiences of irritation or impatience or judgment, we can look deep within ourselves to see what element of that is within ourselves. And maybe even be thankful for the person that has given us this gift to see it. It may not be on the surface of our being. I remember Pierre Valaille would describe it in this way. He'd say, it maybe wasn't always evident to you what that quality is within you, but the fact is you may hold a resentment towards that person because they are expressing something that you'd like to be able to express but can't. So it could even be something wonderful that they're expressing and you're judging it in some way. So look at it in many different aspects of what is this? Is this something in myself that I wish to bring forth and can't, and therefore I'm judging or finding fault with someone? Or is this something that I know is hidden in me and I know I need to work on refining myself more? It's a good lesson. Not always easy to do. It's like trying to capture a butterfly. So again, let me go back and read this statement. Human nature is such that all bad things one sees in another seem worse than they are. But when oneself does the same, one always finds a reason to defend that fault. So we want to think about that. You know, do we partake of something and defend our actions? Best to look within. It's like partaking of all that one dislikes in another only by the habit of finding fault. Well, maybe sometimes I know I do that, you know. And what I do, I try to do instead, I don't always do it. I'm not perfect. I'm working on it, like all of us. But if I look at someone and I think, oh, they've given me a dirty look, why are they giving me a dirty look? I just say, well, you're so silly. Who cares if they give you a dirty look? It's like, and then I say, maybe they're unhappy about something. Instead of judging them, I'll pray for them. So I send a little prayer, just offer a little prayer for their happiness and goodness and grace. And I let it go. It's a lot more easy to let go than entertaining whatever might else be going on in my mind. So I give you that as a maybe a little tool. So now I would like to work with the, I don't even know what time now. Let me check my time. I'm not even into the first paragraph of the teaching, so excuse me. I guess this is the teaching for today. But I'd like to work with the breath a little bit, and I'd like for us to think about the breath coming into the heart, the deep heart, and knowing that within the heart is the soul, and bringing that light in to the deepest part of our being. There is an analogy that's given, I think it's in the Upanishads, and they say the Atman, or that God self, is like the size of the thumb that resides behind our heart, which means maybe within the heart. So it's not physical heart. We're talking something that's more metaphysical, but, you know, just this deep part of that's most protected. And I brought some visual examples, not that they will help, but they could more confuse than anything. But as I was thinking about this teaching this morning on my morning walk with Parker, I found these gifts from nature. And there's this tree, I don't know what it is. I think maybe Nur Latifah had found out the name of it, but I'm gonna show you the different evolutions of this little pod. It's quite a large tree with waxy leaves, but there's this little, it's kind of almost looks like a nut, but it's not a nut. But isn't it pretty? Look at that. That's just gorgeous. And then it falls from the tree. It loosens itself here. I think this one fell prematurely because of the winds we're having. But one could think of this like the soul. The soul that is the aspect of God that becomes individuated and enters the body. And then it evolves further and it starts to open like this. You can see. And this could be the heart. We could say this is the heart encapsulating the soul. These are just, however, evolutions of the same thing, but it's a visual example. And then it opens even more and it becomes like the mind, okay, even deeper. And look at the beautiful color in there. These are like our different thoughts. And then you can see again the bottom of that and look in there. So beautiful. But then there's even a further stage. It grows open further. And now this is all empty in here. And we see that many, many times in Sufi poetry and in other poetry, mystical poetry, it talks about opening and emptying. So we have the soul, which is encapsulated by the heart, which is over the mind and further opens into, one could say this could even be the body. So it's all, they're all enclosed within each other, but they're the same thing all together. So it's like this evolution of consciousness. And Mirza talks about the soul too, just to further clarify for people that the soul is, I'm going to go on. I'm going to do the breaths and then I think he clarifies it in just a minute in the teaching. So let's breathe into this kind of nugget of the soul, which is like this part of ourselves that is connected to the divinity of God. It's this light within our very being. And breathe in through the fontanelle, the crown chakra. Bring it into this kernel of light, this soul, this pure consciousness. And then allow it to fill the body on the exhale. So breathe in through the crown, touching that deepest part of one's being. Let that deep part unfold, expand, and become light. Again, breathe in through the crown. Let the light descend to this kernel of light, pure consciousness, residing in your soul. Let it expand through the heart, the mind, and even the body. The body is our instrument. And one more time, breathe in the light. And let it expand and move through all those levels of one's being. So, now we continue with the teaching from today, and it is Murshid's words, Hazrat and Icon, that I give you. He says, the soul itself is no other than consciousness. The soul itself is no other than consciousness. So we hear these terms sort of interplay, but he's saying it's no other. It is consciousness. The soul is consciousness, which is all-pervading. But when the same consciousness is caught in limitation through being surrounded by the elements, in that state of captivity, it's called the soul. So that's very, very important. Consciousness is all-pervading. But when it becomes caught in limitation in this body, in this mind, in this heart, surrounded by elements. And those of you that have been on the Sufi path know that we have the elemental breaths that we purify through, and we have the Murshid's teachings quite extensive on how the body, the lymphatic system, the liquids of the body, the organs and everything relate metaphysically to these other, to breath and functions at the organs relate to a metaphysical quality or property or expression. So this is how we define soul. Souls are pervading. When it gets captured in the body, then it starts to be surrounded by the elements. So the consciousness then becomes soul, an individuated soul. Doesn't mean it's not still connected to the all-pervading consciousness. In fact, that's the whole reason for the spiritual path, is to find our way back there. That's it. If you've arrived, you can click off. You know it all. I hope you do. Teach me if you do. So Murshid describes it another way. Our spirit, our soul, is the real part of us, but the body is the garment. And he says, a person would not find peace at the tailor's because the coat comes from there. Neither can the spirit obtain true happiness from just the earth because the body belongs to the earth. So he's always pointing to, don't get so concretized around it. Kind of go for that, the innermost part of the being. We are now experiencing some severe weather. It's gotten very windy and everything's very obscure out there from rain, so excuse me. I hope we can keep the electricity going. If we blip out, I'll just keep recording and then I'll have it online. Sometimes that happens. So he says, Murshid says, there's a light within every soul and it only needs the clouds. Again, these aspects of mind that need to be purified, it only needs the clouds that overshadow it to be broken for the beams to shine forth. So we're always looking at that clarifying and purifying, not because there's anything dirty about us, but it's because it's become obscured and we need to remove the dust. So I'd like to work with a practice here. And it's bringing in Yanur from last month. We worked with Noor. Noor, N-U-R or N-O-O-R, is light, and its luminosity itself. It is the light within every pore of our being, and it's the light at the core of our being. And so we find that it's also it's the kind of light that's self-illuminating. bringing awareness into the heart and the soul and the body, even self-illuminating awareness at the core of everything that can emanate outward. It's not illumination necessarily from the outer realms, but it's an inner light. So we're going to work with Nur, and then we're going to work with Hay, like hi, hello, or it's also spelled H-A-Y-Y. It's transliteration, but yeah, hi. And we're going to kind of bring that down. So we're going to invoke Nur, like we were doing with the breath practice, through the crown, and then we're going to go hi, and we're going to let it fill our being. Okay, Yah Nur Yaha. And for Annette's sake, because she's new, we use for the first set of our practice, spoken practice aloud, we use the prefix Yah, and Yah means, O Divine One, or O Beloved, my dear, the dearest aspect of divine light. So we'll use that in a respectful way to this divine quality. Okay, so we're going to do these two practices in tandem. And it'll sound like this. And maybe for the first 11, we can kind of intone it to get a kind of vibration from it. So we'll say, Yanur-yai. 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 We'll continue spoken, and please remind yourself you're bringing in the light through your crown, and with Hay, it's like this spark that just creates a beautiful warm light that fills your entire being, illuminates you from within. So keep that visualization. Yanur, ya hai. 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 Now we whisper and we breathe in, Nur, and we breathe out, hai. Nur, 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 hai. Hi. Now just breathing in and out, Nur Hay, bringing the light in and growing brighter and brighter, using the breath to clear the dust from the land. Anur Yahai. So the teaching continues this way. These are Murshid's words again. The nature of the soul may be studied in the nature of the eye. All things exposed to the eye are related or reflected, excuse me, all things exposed to the eye are reflected in it for the moment. And when the eye is turned away from the reflection, it is no more. It had received it for a moment only. So the soul is inherently empty. It's inherently pure. Sometimes the analogy is given like a mirror. The mirror is empty of all images. But when an image comes before it, then it sees that. But the interesting thing is it can sometimes mistakenly identify with that. So be mindful of that. Are we identifying with the reflection? Or are we identifying with the soul? And again, Murshid talked about how those impressions can come into the mind, and from those they can take seed in the heart, and from the heart, then they can grow outward. So again, always wanting to protect that precious part. And then he goes into this kind of philosophical statement. It's very much like the Prajnaparamita Sutra, which talks about emptiness. And here Murshid describes it in Sufi terms in the English language. Such is the nature of soul that youth, age, beauty, ugliness, sin, or virtue, all these are before the soul when they are exposed to it during the physical and mental existence. And the soul, interested in the reflection, may for a time be attracted and bound by the object of reflection. But as soon as the soul turns away, it is free from it. And so this is what we're trying to do. We are trying to free ourselves from those things that we misidentify with. And again, we may be doing it for our own purpose, but the truth is, we elevate the world by doing this work on ourselves. And we become an example. We don't need to teach. We don't need to say anything. People will feel it in our heart. They'll see it in our glance. They'll know in the atmosphere. So take it up as the work of the Bodhisattva that wants to elevate the world and help all beings. It's an honorable cause, and it can be a motivation for us to do our own inner work. Murshid goes on to say, every experience on the physical or astral plane is just a dream before the soul. It is ignorance when it takes this experience to be real. But we do it. We think it's real. It is ignorance when it takes the experience to be real. It does so because it does not see itself as the eye sees all things, but not itself. So again, we're trying to turn the glance inward, use our breath practices, our mantra, Wazifa, to keep turning ourselves inward. Doesn't mean we're not fully engaged in the world. We don't see it and experience it. In fact, we do, but we're rising above it. We're not letting it bring us down. Therefore, the soul identifies itself with all things that it sees and changes its own identity with the change of its constantly changing vision. So I've said it many times, to thine own self be true, and who is thine own self, if not the soul, the light of the soul? So let's not be confused, and let's not diminish it by misidentification. This is why Mersha talks about how we have to refine our personalities. Well, we don't have to, it's all a choice. But if we're on the path and seriously aspiring to live a spiritual life, even in the world, amongst the world, well, we can look at that. We can work on refining, refining, refining. I hope for myself and I hope for you. I pray for us. The soul has no birth, no death, no beginning, no end. Sin cannot touch it, nor can virtue exalt it. Wisdom cannot open it up, nor can ignorance darken it. It has always been, and it will always be. It's our very being, and all else is a cover, like the globe on the light. So again, the soul can get confused by the shade of the lamp style, the whatever. We can even judge it, and then we start misidentifying. We think that's the soul. It's not. The essence, the pure essence that is beyond all those things, is what we really are. That's what we want to know and feel. We need to be reminded of that every day. It's a good reminder. Good to keep on track. The soul's unfoldment comes from its own power, which ends in its breaking through the ties of the lower planes. The soul's unfoldment comes from its own power, which ends in its breaking through the ties of the lower planes. So again, this is what I'm talking about. We don't misidentify with what's put before the soul. We see it. It may be interesting. We can enjoy it. We can be entertained by it. Then when we go into the quietude, we have that contact with that deeper part of ourselves. That's not any of those things. It's beyond that. It is free by nature and looks for freedom during its captivity. And what is captivity but life itself, when the soul becomes embodied? And so we talked about it last class, and we're going to do the practice again, the Nur al-Anwar, that we sometimes feel like we've lost that contact, we've lost that connection. We're searching and yearning for a connection. We think it's with people and we think it's with things, but ultimately it's with this deeper part of ourselves. And yes, of course, our relationships, our home, our communities, they can all be wonderful things to be engaged with. But when we leave this earth, we go alone. We've come alone and we're going to leave alone. And the things that we're taking with us are the soul and what's more, the impressions. Yeah, the impressions. So you want to work on that because I'm going to tell you what right now, heaven and hell, it's right here, right now. So work on those impressions to clarify it. Mershit says, it is free by nature and it looks for freedom during its captivity. All the holy beings of the world have become so by freeing the soul, its freedom being the only object there is in life. Now, maybe we're not holy beings, or are we? I think we all are. We all bring a spark of that divine. And, you know, we don't have to wear certain robes or certain hats or certain shoes or be reciting certain mantras or in certain temples or synagogues or whatever. We're all holy beings by our birth. Our soul is a part of that divine spark within us. So can we elevate ourselves? Just think about it and try. It's worth it. It's worth that journey. So worth it. So we're going to work with this practice that we did last week. It's been that quick for me that it seems like last week. And the practice again is Nur, N-U-R or N-O-O-R, Al, A-L. In Arabic it means like the. And Anwar. And Anwar is like Anwar Sadat. We know that. He was the past president of Iran and is it Iran or Egypt, Joe? Help me out. Was Egypt, sorry. And anwar, the meaning is luminosity itself. So you see how nur and anwar, al-anwar, connect. And I had talked about how this was the practice that Murshida Vera gave me when I was yearning and longing, feeling disconnected. And she said, this practice will connect you with the light of all of creation and the whole universe. And you bring it into yourself. And I had used the analogy, we could talk it as like gathering the light in a basket and offering at the altar of the soul, or we could talk about it like a big net that goes out and gathers the star, the light of the stars, and brings it into our being. Last time I gave this surah from the Quran, and I wanted to go through it again because I think it's such a beautiful, it's probably the most mystical and the most esoteric surah chapter there is in the Quran. And so it says, God, in this language, Allah, is the light of heaven and earth, meaning the same light that's in all the heavens, in the divine realms, is also here on earth. It's all pervading. The example of this light is like a niche within which is a lamp. So now we're talking niche, this body, the niche. And within it is the lamp. So we could talk about that as being like the heart, but on the space in between is the mind that interprets. And the lamp is within a glass. Okay, so now there are these different levels, moving deeper and deeper. And the glass is, as it were, a pearly white star. And inside, there's a light that's lit from the oil of the olive tree. And remember, the olive tree, well, we all know how delicious and wonderful olive oil is for everything, but also the olive tree, the branch, the sign of peace. We want to go to that deep part of ourselves that's beyond conflict, confusion, abuse, every contradiction. We want to go there. That's where there's the peace. It's in the soul. We go deeper and deeper. So lit from the oil of the blessed olive tree, neither of the east nor of the west. This knowledge doesn't belong to anyone or anything or any one religion. This knowledge is innate within us. Yes, religion and philosophies and teachings, they help to highlight that and illuminate it for us. But no one owns it. It's there. It's infinite. Again, all pervading. Neither of the east or of the west, whose oil is almost a glow, even if it's untouched by fire. So it has that quality of nur, self-illuminating, that oil which is almost glowing without being touched by fire. It's the light upon lights. We could also say it's the light within light. And God guides to the light all those who God wills. And I believe God wills all of us, else we wouldn't be here. And God presents examples for the people. So look around. When you see people doing good, take it as a good example. Don't fault them, or don't compare yourself to them either. It's not good. Just say, I admire that. May I have that quality in myself. And then I do have that quality in myself. May it be actualized. If it's my path, we all have different paths. Remember that. And Allah, or God, is the one that knows all things. There are no secrets. All pervading. Omniscient and omnipresent. All knowing, all pervading. So this surah, this passage relates to this practice, Nur al-Anwar. And we're going to gather that light, not just from this universe, from the infinite universes, from beginningless time to endless time. And we're going to infuse our being with this light for the benefit of clarification of the body. Let it heal the body. For benefit of clarification of the mind, let it remove obscurations from the mind. For the benefit of the heart, may the heart feel strong and pure. And may our feelings be wholesome and ultimately reaching the soul. So let's again intone this practice for the first 11. I'll keep count for us, and then we'll go into recitation, just as spoken. Nor Al-Anwar, 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 Nor As we do this, just think of casting your net, or I think there are some Sufi mystics that talk about taking one's robe and gathering the light, in shrouding yourself in it, and letting that light penetrate deep, deep, deep. And you know what? Over time, you may not feel it in this moment, but you will, and you're going to start to notice how that light is calling your attention throughout the month as you work with the practice. So let's continue spoken. Nor Al-Anwar, 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 Nor Al-Anwar. And now we whisper, Nor Al-Anwar. Breathe in, Nor, and out. Nor Al-Anwar. And now just go into the breath and feel the atmosphere of this vibration, continuing to draw upon the light of the universe, infusing it in your being, touching that innermost precious part, your soul, and letting the soul radiate out into your life. Nor Al-Anwar. Blessings, blessings. And Hakeem, that was a beautiful passage that you sent from A Message in Our Time, and by your permission, and hopefully by the permission of the publishers, it's probably in public domain now. I think I'll share that because I think that helps to illuminate that practice as well. We're coming to the close of our time. I'll stay online so we can chat if you wish, or if you have some questions or comments, but I want to so please everyone stay muted for the time being. A public service announcements before our closing prayer. Someone's unmuted. Could you please mute yourself? Lower left corner, mute. So the next class will be October 9th. September will go somewhat quickly, I'm sure, right into October 9th. October 9th is when we have our Midwest Sufi camp, but it'll be virtual. And the hosts of it have been gracious enough to ask me to participate. So we'll step aside from this teaching so that I can be thematically tied in to the camp theme. But I invite all of you to attend. It'll be on October 9th. We'll send out a message to you. And I hope to keep the same time slot, but just kind of be mindful if that should change. In mid-October, there'll be another presentation, and it would require a registration. I'm so happy that I'll be speaking at the Parliament of World Religions, and it will again be virtual because of COVID. And I'll be presenting with a friend of mine who's a filmmaker, Cynthia Lucas, who's a bit of a Gandhian. She's really taken very deeply into her heart Gandhian philosophy. It's been core to her being for, I think since she was a child, as she explains to me. And she's created two films on Gandhi that are PBS films, but also she is now working on a film, which I'm very happy and proud of her for this, on Gandhi's wife, because she, of course, was eclipsed by Gandhi's greatness, but nonetheless also very important in the, the passive resistance and nonviolent work done to free India. So she and I will be presenting together, and my subject, I'm very happy to say, will be on Noor Anisa Nayak Khan. One of the overarching themes of the Parliament of World Religions this year is compassion in action, and these women so greatly represent it. So that will be in mid-October, I think around the 19th or something, but we'll let you know as we know. I don't think the whole schedule for the Parliament is yet fixed. But I invite you to attend. It would require registration. I'm trying to figure out how to record it so that I can make it available if you don't want to register. Of course, being registered for the Parliament, and I think it's a small registration fee. It's like $50, so it's worth supporting the Parliament, but not necessary. I'll try to figure out a way to record it and make it available to you all. But do wish me luck. I'm in the middle of my research and wanting to get the feeling and the essence of Noor across, and as well as her gentleness and her heroism in World War II. My other public service announcement, which some of you have already generously participated in, are donations that can be made to keep promoting the class. Of course, I say it again, website, publications, so forth. But this month, we've gotten a recent message from the Hope Project in India, which is near Murshid's Dargah, and you know that this is a project that feeds the very poor of the poor there in New Delhi, and also is dedicated to the education of school children. And of course, COVID they're not in touch by it. It's quite severe there as well. So they're trying to find new methodologies for getting the teachings to the children and the homework back. And so I'd like to support that. And so the donations that you give to me, I'll send part of that to the Hope Project. And your giving then will increase the merit of all this goodness that's going on there, feeding the poor and educating the poor, especially poor women children that need it so much, teaching them also skills. They're dedicated to sort of handicraft skills so that children can make a livelihood as they grow older. And then also, some of you may have heard that Murshid Wali Ali of the Rouhaniyat has fallen into poor health, and there is a GoFundMe that is offering financial support to him and his family. And so I'd like to send some of our contributions there as well. And we have a nest egg, so be as generous as you can, but I also have some that I've nest egged away from your previous donations, and I'll make sure that those get shared with those two efforts. Again, you can go through PayPal. You go to our website, upper right corner, there's a donate link. And you can use credit card even without a PayPal account, or you can do it through Facebook and Network for Good, and we'll get the proceeds eventually. Now, let's take a deep breath. Thank you for letting me get that public service announcement in. Let us close with the prayer Khatum. O thou who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit and unite us all in thy perfect being. Amen.